Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax. I am here as usual with Michael Brazenly, but we have a special guest. We're getting the prophets, the geniuses together. Everybody say hi. Fred Woodley, welcome to the show.
Woo, I'm back again.
Yeah, buddy. Yes, and Michael, you should say hi too.
Hi, everybody.
All right, so we are all here. Oh yeah, looks like everybody's coming through loud and clear, so that is good. And for those of you who maybe are tuning in for the first time for whatever reason, first of all, you should go back, pause this episode right now, go back and listen to my previous 170 episodes or whatever they are, then catch up to here. Then you will know about Michael, me, and Fred. So Fred is the host of the Delivering Solidarity podcast, and also Fred is the president of Branch 385 in Youngstown, Ohio. So, Fred, you just did your local memorandum of agreements, right? Or we're in that process right now. You have a couple of agreements locked in?
I have a couple locked in. I have about 15 that are still hanging in the wind.
Because each AO, each associate office, needs its own MOU, right?
Yes, and they all got cute this time, and every single one of them wanted to open locals.
Yeah, so let me ask you about this, if you're willing to talk about it. Have you noticed a pattern in what management is trying to get at with reopening all these locals?
Yes, I figured out the pattern. It was labor directed them all to send me a letter, and then beyond that, none of the postmasters know what to do.
That sounds exactly right. That is the management that we all know and love. Yeah, that sounds right. Okay, so that... Yeah, we read that letter last time you were on, and that does not surprise me at all that none of them actually have direction on, hey, this needs to come out, or, yeah, that sounds right. All right, so the ones that you've closed so far, are you happy with where things sit?
So far, yes.
Okay.
I would say that all the ones that we have closed have either gone in the benefit of the carriers of that station, or they have gone to where... both sides kind of got something they wanted.
All right. That's cool. That's good. I mean, it should be, you know, some give and take and cooperation there. So that's good to hear. Now, on that note, since Fred, you are president of your branch, you know, Michael has designs on being president of Branch 2502 here in Las Vegas.
Yes, I am.
And our campaign season is about to reopen because, again, if you've been following the show, you know that our election got utterly screwed up last time, and we're having to redo it. So, Michael, you're running for president again, right?
Yes, I am.
All right, good deal. And the most important position for any president is their recording secretary. Who are you planning on nominating for your recording secretary?
That would be somebody standing right next to me.
Oh, is it Annie? No, it's me.
I don't think Annie's around us.
No, Annie's laying over on the couch up on top of the pillow.
So
we're running for that. So look, we find ourselves in a situation. Fred, talk a little bit about what it was like when you ran. Like, it was a contested election, right? It was pretty close?
It was contested, but it was very different from the situation you guys are in. Because in your situation, while... Glenn did pass away. Mm-hmm. Paul was part of the good old boys in that administration that was already there.
Right.
So you're dealing with incumbents that have been there for a very long time.
Yes.
In my situation, the president and vice president both decided they were going to retire at the same time. So there was just a void.
Okay, gotcha. Well, we should be so lucky. Maybe that'll happen for this rerun, but somehow I doubt it. Yeah, and the guy who I'm running against has been an incumbent for, what, 30 years, Michael?
No. I think it's because he was
He's been a branch officer for that long.
He was our branch president also.
Right, many years ago. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Fred, you came in to this power vacuum, and then you had opposition, obviously.
I did have opposition, and it was a very, very close election. Our branch has... roughly 800 members, counting the retirees.
All right.
And I won by 4 votes.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
That is really tight. So that means that you come in to a branch that is essentially evenly split, that it is divided with you on one side and the person you beat on the other side. And were there hard feelings about that?
There were hard feelings on the other side.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you didn't feel... No, you don't say. All right, so we're going to wind up, assuming that Michael wins, that we continue this winning streak that we're on, that if Michael comes in, there's going to be hard feelings on the other side for this as well. How do you go about healing that division and trying to bring your branch back together?
Well, what I did was when the people that were on the other side of that election, anytime they would approach me and they wanted to be involved with the branch again, I would give them the opportunities that they were seeking.
Yeah, because, funny that.
You separate when it's time for a branch election. That's just the natural course of things. But after the election, you have to come back together and be a branch again.
Right. Yep, that's exactly right. And this whole mentality of retaliation of, oh, anybody who stands up, you know, wants to run for their own position, they're out after I get elected. To me, that's bullshit, frankly. That is not productive for the branch, and you have to think about what's best for the members.
Yeah, well, our current president is retaliatory, and yeah, even if he wins, he will boycott us.
Yeah, well, as we've seen, he mm-hmm. won a year ago, you know, in the first run of this election, and you're still not a steward, I'm not a steward, and yeah, this is obviously retaliation. So Fred, you bring these people in, and now how is that going? How are these people who were once your political opponents, how are they doing?
Well, now we're just union brothers, and they're stewards. I'm the president. We're working together for the membership.
That's perfect. That's exactly what it's supposed to be.
So you install them as stewards?
Yes. Wow. And
funny,
also
isn't that something? Yeah.
Wow, that's not something that our president will do.
No, certainly not. Mm-hmm. Okay, go on, Fred.
I literally have given them every position that they've asked for that has been open in the union, because I'm not about gatekeeping. I'm not trying to keep anybody out. Yeah, we got divided during election time, but it doesn't benefit any of our members if we stay divided. We have to come back together and represent the carriers.
Yes. See, this is why I like Fred. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Fred, you are exactly right about that. And Michael, in our platform, we'll have to do a platform again for this rerun of the election.
Yes.
But you can be sure that on our platform, that no retaliation will be part of the platform.
You know, that goes into a little bit of a different wording on that.
Okay.
Because also, so people surrounding me, I want that I can trust.
Yeah,
that
sure.
They're not going to backstab me.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some of that too.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I get that. Fred, do you run into that? Well, you have. I mean, it's not like your administration has been conflict-free. You've had people who, because of, like, you've had to remove stewards, right?
I have had to do that. I try to only do that when I see no other option, because I'm all about, I'll train and retrain people over and over again and do everything I can to help them be successful.
Right. We want as many hands as possible helping the branch, and removing people obviously prohibits them at that point from helping the branch.
Now, the downside is, because everybody approaches it the way Michael just said, where you go, you know, I want to surround myself with people that aren't going to backstab me.
Right.
Well, everybody has a different perception of what backstabbing is.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you'll get people. I ran with the whole slate of people, you know, a whole ticket almost. We left a couple of positions open because you always have those people that are like, you know, I don't want to be on a ticket, but they're the right person for the job. So I didn't pick anybody to run against them. Well, as you go about it and you're doing the union business and things happen as they tend to do, you'll end up with different people that they get different political goals than you. So they decide they're going to do something completely out of left field, and you as the president might not necessarily agree with it, but you have to sit there and reflect on it and think about how you're going to react or not react to whatever that person just did.
Yeah. Yep. Michael, you picking up what he's laying down?
Exactly. When I say that, you know, I want to pick the people that are not going to backstab me. You know, there's actually very few. Okay, even the people that's going against me, they're just scared of our current president, and so they're only doing what they're doing because they're scared. But they're good people too.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I'm not gonna, you know, do anything against them.
Right.
So it's just the fear mongering that this president is doing. I think once he's gone, I think he's definitely going to change a lot of these people's minds and how to run this our branch. And I think our branch will be better because of that.
Right. If anything, right now, people are afraid to speak up. And when you become president, they no longer have to be afraid to speak up.
Exactly.
Dissenting voices will be welcome. They'll be heard. And they'll be incorporated into what we're trying to do. You know, it's not like we're the only ones with good ideas. People who are on the other side have good ideas, too. Right now, they're just afraid to speak up.
Well, I need people around me, if I'm doing anything wrong, to tell me that I'm doing anything wrong and not say anything.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's where, you know, like this whole beef between me and our current president comes from is that, like, I started pointing out, like, hey, what we're doing is not consistent with our bylaws. And his response to that was, you're out. The squeaky wheel gets greased, as he put it. Mm-hmm. So, Fred, how have you dealt with those dissenting voices, people who think that maybe the branch has room for improvement?
Well, I welcome anybody that comes and says that they think something can be done better, as long as they have ideas. What I don't like is
solutions. Yeah.
Somebody that does nothing comes and criticizes what other people are doing.
And then offers no solutions as well. It's just criticism.
Exactly. That doesn't benefit anybody, and that just makes the people feel discouraged that are doing the work.
Right. Yep. I definitely agree with that. So, go ahead, Fred.
Well, just one thing that I will caution, because this is something I never considered before I actually ran to become the branch president, is once you actually are in that position and you're the branch president, you'll be amazed how many people just suddenly have a problem with you because of something that you allegedly said or did that you never said or did.
It's already happening.
Yeah, Michael, you have any experience with that?
It's already happening in my station. I got people spreading rumors that I said this and I said that. I'm going, I never said that. So, yeah, that's already being sent around in my station, but that's being told. And then I probe to see where I'm getting it. The hall told me that. Why would the hall tell you that? I'm not, you know, they're on my opponent's side, so of course they're going to tell you some stories. You guys got to be smarter than that. I tried to tell them that. You got to be smarter. Right. No. Some people are believing the crap that's coming out of their mouth.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, so let's, what I really want to talk about, what I find most fascinating, and why I wanted to get you guys together is because you both seem to have this prophetic ability to be able to tell, like, what our branch officers are going to do or what's going to happen. And it is amazing to me. And, guys, is it just that I don't see it because I have these rose-tinted glasses on? I mean, is our branch acting obvious? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think you do have a rose-tinted glasses.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah. Fred, would you agree with that? Is there a standard playbook that our branch is playing from and I just refuse to see it?
No, Alan, you're such an honorable guy.
Right.
You're such a good guy that you don't see the bad in people.
Right. I assume that other people are going to behave honorably.
Exactly.
As well.
Honorably as well.
Fred, what's your take on that?
I go the other direction with that. And I say that you only look at it with such optimism because you've essentially been blackballed from having the experiences with the NALC to know how these things go.
Yeah. That's fair. Right. I don't have that insider experience that other people who've been around it for a while have built up. And
see, I've dealt with management like this for 30 years in my life.
Right.
And so I see it.
Right. Yeah. What about you, Fred? Is that as well? Like, Ali, you've told me enough times, Fred, that this comes from your own experience in dealing with these people, dealing with this situation, seeing a bunch of different branches. And it's kind of a standard playbook, right?
That's just it. I've made friends with people in branches all across the country, and a lot of them are officers or former officers. And the people that I've talked to and interacted with, you know, the same people I see at Committee of Presidents meetings, and I see at state conventions, and I see at the national convention. And it seems like everywhere you go, the same people exist. They just have different names and faces.
Yeah, I get that impression too. Now that I get emails from people around the country, classesofmail@gmail.com, you know, I get these emails and people are having the exact same problems in their branch that I'm having in my branch. Usually it's not quite as dysfunctional, but dude, honestly, I've heard from people whose branches are more dysfunctional than mine. Like the folks who were running for office in New York who their branch officers won't even let them see the branch financial records.
What branch was that?
That was 38, I think it was.
Oh, okay.
Does that sound right?
Yeah, because Vincent Sombrano came from
36. Yeah, that was the 36. That's what it was. They are the Sombrano branch.
Oh, man.
And yeah, dude, it's wild.
That's sad to see from...
Yeah, right. From a branch with that kind of legacy where, yeah, it's madness to me. And it's still like, Fred, Michael, you guys are exactly right. Because even dealing with it, even seeing it, it still blows my mind. Fred, does this no longer surprise you that like there are branches that run that way?
It doesn't really surprise me.
Yeah.
You know, when you sent me this 10 sheet for this episode, the only thing that popped into my head is that Alan Gygax and the NALC Prophets would be a phenomenal band name for like a late show.
Yeah. Yeah, that it would. That it would. Ah, dude, that's great. So... All right, so let's talk about then our re-election or the renewed election, right? National had to come in. They're running our election now because obviously our own officers screwed it up so bad.
Yeah, we still have to figure out more on that because the lady that's running is on Keisha Lewis's team. And there's a lot of politics going on with that right now.
I don't know that Keisha Lewis is particularly interested or, you know, a fan of our branch at the moment. So I don't know how much we have to worry about that. Well, let's hear Fred's take on that we're getting somebody from the business agent's office. You know, you had said before that like I should realize like with the investigators who came that there were presidents just like our current president and there's something of a club. How much do we have to think about that going into this election, into this re-election that's being run by National?
I still remember that day you called me, Alan, when you're like, you know, They got these outside presidents coming in now. They're going to be investigating. And I'm like, Alan. I'm like, those presidents, they're all friends with Paul. They're going to come in there. They're going to act like they're doing their thing. And ultimately, you know, nothing's going to be worthy of redoing.
They did absolutely nothing.
Yeah, Fred was right. I mean, they put together like a 120-page investigation.
And they literally came up to the podium and said, we want to stay neutral, so we're not going to say anything bad about anybody. Even though we have all these charges against your president, but we're not going to say anything.
Well, and I don't know if you've taken the time to consider this either, but the fact that they've waited almost a year now to redo your election.
Right.
They're giving Paul a solid time to be the president and be the incumbent, so it's even more difficult to beat him in an election.
Yes.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. People are now used to him being president.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes it tough.
Well,
go ahead, Michael.
I take that back a little bit because even though people are getting more used to him being the president, but people are also finding out how much of a jackass he is. And so I'm getting more supporters because these people cannot deal with him.
Right. They're dissatisfied. Mm-hmm. Even so, obviously, nobody who we're talking to, the people I'm about to mention, there's no way they're going to go on record with this, but people within his own administration are telling us and telling our supporters how dissatisfied they are with the way he's running the branch. And you see it at the meetings where again and again at these meetings, you have the people who put the mail in the box are voting one way and the people on the executive board are voting the other way. And they're literally at odds with the carriers they're supposed to be representing. And I hope that that's being noticed by the branch at large.
And that's great that you're getting the active carriers supporting you, but what are you guys doing in the interim to reach to the retirees?
I don't know. I don't know how to reach the retirees aside from spending the money to send them a mailer.
Because that's your biggest hurdle right there, because now the retirees see Paul as the president.
Right.
And you saw when it came time for charges, you walked into the nursing home.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Yes, as you predicted.
Mm-hmm. You saw the numbers that they can produce when it comes time to protect him from charges. So just imagine the numbers they can produce in a ballot.
Right, because it goes directly to their house. And, you know, I've thought about that as a potential bylaw change. I know a lot of branches do at the station voting. And it makes it easier for carriers to vote. And it means that retirees would actually have to come down to the station to cast a ballot. There's something about that that appeals to me. How do you do it in at your branch, Fred?
It's funny you should ask, because we actually just proposed a bylaw to change it slightly.
Uh-huh.
We do in-person voting at the place where we have our branch meetings.
Okay.
And last election, the one that I won, was the first time that we knew anything about absentee ballots and offered them.
Right. Yeah, because nobody bothers to crack open that election book.
Yes. Okay. And so this time we put something in the actual bylaws about being able to request absentee ballots and making it more well known for people to get ballots if they can't come vote in person.
Right on.
Oh, at our branch, somebody came to ask for a ballot, and they were refused by our branch.
Yeah, yeah, that did happen. Right, they wanted an absentee ballot. I mean, it's kind of, there's not a real functional difference between a mail-in ballot and an absentee ballot, except that maybe you'd get it sent somewhere different, or the timing might be different. But yeah, anytime you want a ballot, it shouldn't be refused, that's for sure.
The only difference is you actually have to ask for an absentee ballot.
Right.
Whereas the mail-in ones go to everybody automatically.
Right, right. And that was a big part of our problem in the last election. We also had retirees who got multiple ballots, right, Michael?
Yes.
Yeah, at good times. I can't imagine who they voted for. So what do you advise to us? Like, how do we reach the retirees? How do we spread the word among retirees?
Getting involved with the actual newsletter, which I know you told me before you just got the Nevada State one.
Yeah.
You don't have an actual branch newsletter.
Correct.
But okay. You said your bylaws call for a branch newsletter, right?
They do. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I would advise you, honestly, if you want to reach the retirees, step up and become the editor for your branch newsletter and get it out there, because the retirees read that stuff that comes to them hard copy.
Yeah, that's a good point. Right. Or I keep... You know, you're not the only person to say I need to submit articles to the state newsletter to get my name out there, get our positions known, and things like that. Yeah, that's a good call. We also advertised in our state newsletter, and that was pretty cost effective. It was only a couple $100, right, Michael?
I think
like it was $200 or something.
Yeah, it was like $200 or $300.
Yeah, yeah. So that's not a bad idea. You know, get our platform in there. Maybe do more than one issue,
which I have a little bit issue with. That is that when we advertise, it actually said it political ad.
Yeah, of course.
Everybody's ad doesn't have anything that says anything on it.
I'm not sure that, I don't think I saw anybody else's ads in our.
Yeah. Well, there's other ads, just like our health benefit officer.
Oh yeah.
Is advertising to help retirees and charges them like $100 a person.
All right. I don't know anything about that.
And nothing is on there that says it's an ad.
Huh?
Yeah.
All right.
Again, we're talking a bunch of other crap.
Yeah, talking shop. We got Fred here. Let's pick Fred's brain and let's use Fred. So, all right. So we've got these local issues. You know, we're still fighting against the incumbent, and we hope that there's dissatisfaction with the incumbents. And we want to, of course, build on that and show that we have a different path. So let's make use of Fred's prophetic ability and honestly Michael's prophetic ability. Let's talk about something that our listeners are really interested in, the national future and how our national election might be shaking out. Because right now, obviously, Renfro's popularity is at like an all-time low.
Well, and I'd like to say something before we go into the future.
Okay, go ahead.
And what they failed us first. Okay, a major one. Okay,
our national officers?
Our national has failed us for a long time, because we have had any air conditioning in our vehicles that they could have passed years ago. Because how long have we had air conditioning in our vehicles?
How long have we not had it, you mean?
Yeah, how long have we had air conditioning? Since what, the 80s?
Oh, you mean like normal vehicles?
Like, right, often? Standard. Yeah, standard yeah, AC right. in all
it's
vehicles.
It's been standard probably since the
80s. Since the 80s,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And since then, we've had vehicles that come to the postal service with air conditioning, and the postmaster of whatever city decided, oh, you know what, we can't have air conditioning in the vehicle. We need to take him out.
Fred, do you remember that when the Ford Windstars came and they actually took the air conditioning out of them?
Yes, I remember management actually saying that they wanted to remove the air conditioning because they didn't want the carriers to be comfortable. They wanted them to get out and deliver the mail.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, yes. Just like we have now with managers actually turning off the AC in the stations to get carriers out.
Did you hear anything, our union do anything about that?
Fred?
I didn't hear anything about that.
Well, I could tell you that a few years back, I got them to completely replace the air conditioning system in my post office, and it was like $1 million because it's a historical building.
Wow.
Dude. Right?
Oh, my God. It never even... Well, because I'm not a steward right now, I can't take that tack, but I have done that at my station. I have tried to file grievances over, like, the lighting in the parking lot and over stuff like that.
Or management turned the air conditioning off until 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, well, they haven't done that. Not on purpose, dude. My station...
No, it's not on purpose.
Yeah. Well, at my station, it really is just in that much disrepair that our air conditioning breaks, like, you know, every month or so.
And they say they switch to turn the air conditioning is in some another city.
Fred, go ahead.
Just want to remind you, you don't have to be a steward to fill out a 1767.
Yeah, and yes. I have done that. That is absolutely true. Yeah, and that is an issue, and it gets attention. But in our case, dude, legit, because I talked to our building manager, our custodian, it really is broken and falling apart and held together with duct tape and baling wire.
They need to put in a work order then, and then facilities will eventually approve it.
Yeah, we have work orders that have now gone to, like, regional headquarters, and, dude, it's a mess that I don't even want to get into, except to say that Rob, our custodian, is the best. And that dude, he goes, you know, whatever level it needs to go to and just keep going up the chain and up the chain.
But this is what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Why didn't our national put something to protect our letter carriers on buildings, vehicles, and things like that? I don't remember hearing them trying to protect it. All they care about is having some rules and then go through arbitration or whatever, the same thing over and over again, but nothing on safety of the carriers. Dude,
it's a great point because, like, in the JCAM, you'll see that, oh, there's a working group that's going to address, like, heat for the carriers. Great. What does that accomplish? What have we gotten out of that?
Nothing has been accomplished, okay? The only way I know that it got accomplished is when carriers are starting to die off. And then Congress got involved, and they started questioning the Postal Service. It's only when they start to change, when we are dying.
All right, so a fair complaint. Obviously, you know, yesterday it was 111, and I was out there delivering the mail with no air conditioning in my LLV, and that's for the birds.
And again, here, this is where I'm supporting James Henry.
Okay.
He used to be at RAA, and I used to talk to him a lot as a steward. He did everything in his power, always trying to protect the carriers.
Yeah, that's always. Good. That's what we want.
Okay, and that is the reason why I know he would be good for our national president.
All right, so look, we got Fred here, and you and I keep talking. Because that's what we always do. All right, so Fred, now that, you know, again, to get back on topic, we have Renfro, who is like all-time low in popularity. Even the business agents are starting to abandon him. So what do you see going forward? You know, who's going to step in? Is it just the CLC or bus? Do you think there'll be additional candidates coming in? What do you think?
Oh, there's definitely additional candidates. We already know, in addition to the CLC, we know Mike Kariff's planning on running for president.
Absolutely, yep.
So it's not going to just be one party or the other, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and like in your own branch where there was this vacuum that was left by the, you know, your previous president finally stepping down, it's kind of that way in national, at least this is my perspective, that Renfro's brand is so damaged that there may be room for an additional establishment candidate as well.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see that. I think Michael and I are both of the same mindset that somebody else from the past might be throwing their name back in the ring.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Michael's nodding his head over here. Yep. Michael, do you want to say who you think is going to come in for the establishment?
You don't have to put it out there because they haven't thought of that yet. You don't want them to get the idea.
That's true. We don't want to do the establishment any favors. Mm-hmm. All right. That's fair. Yep. All right. So I think I've covered mainly what I want to talk about. Go ahead.
Well, we need change.
Yeah, obviously we need change. Yeah, we need change at the national level.
You see that too, right, Fred? We need change.
Oh, we definitely do. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I haven't figured out completely yet is if Renfro would be humble enough to let somebody else run as the national brand candidate, or if he's so much of a narcissist that he still believes he can win.
Oh, he's a narcissist.
Yeah, I agree with that too. Yeah, because you look at, I heard through the grapevine recently that even Barner got duties stripped from him. And my presumption about why that happened is because he started putting feelers out for him to run as president in the next election, and Renfro got upset. That's my presumption.
So what? Brian wants to run all of our NLC by himself?
Well,
because he already took stuff out of James Henry.
Yeah. Yes, he does want to run it by himself, or have like office assistants, you know, his own people that he appoints to do it.
Arguably, the most important thing our national officers do is negotiate our national agreement, and he did that as a one-man show.
Mm-hmm. Right, and we saw the result. Yep.
Yeah, that was terrible.
Yep.
So this is and felt the result.
So right. This is a theory that I've thought of it myself. Is that management is looking to make all the office time on 1 hour, right? That's going around nationwide.
Or less.
And then now they're going to go and do 6 day counts in the fall.
Okay.
So since all of our office time is an hour.
Right.
And then our new contract says, oh, by the way, you don't get that. You lose 13 minutes. So does that mean that now they're going to go around and say our office time is 47 minutes?
It's already happening. That is absolutely happening. Mm-hmm. That they're saying 45 minutes in the office now. Yep.
And so that is the reason why that if everybody complies to what management wants, that hour, they're going to look for 45 minutes.
Of course. Fred, are you seeing that as a branch president? Are you seeing that from managers in your branch area?
I have seen when the tier reap was going on, pretty much the understanding became you got an hour of office time no matter what, whether you were above, below it, you were getting credited for 1 hour. You're being evaluated on the street with the scanner data.
Right.
And for anybody that hasn't figured it out, the way you protect your route in the event of a route inspection is you show as little office time as possible and really long on the street.
Right, because they'll just cut back your office time if it's over standard.
Yeah, they keep showing ways to get rid of office time, but they can't make street time disappear.
Right. Yep, I agree with that completely. You want to make your route your full 7.5, however long you can make it on the street, absolutely, because they can't take that time away from you.
Well, except in Las Vegas, I feel like it needs to be opposite. Because well,
obviously we want longer in the office.
Yeah, longer in the building, in the air-conditioned building.
Right. And I think a fighting NALC would push for us to be able to do more work in the office because the conditions are better.
So if you can
go to the street, take all those heat breaks in the casinos.
Yeah, that is dude, I put that on my 3996. I don't know if you do. Well, you're 8 hours.
Yeah, but Michael. See, the casinos are only run by a few routes, not the whole city.
Oh, dude, I've got actually my route. I'm not actually close to a casino. Unless you count Dottie's, I don't count Dottie's. So, yeah, but anyway, on my 3996, I will put extra brakes needed due to excessive heat. And management doesn't push back at that, at least at my station.
I mean, I got a 7-Eleven that's close to my route.
Yeah, yeah,
you can go there. And Domino's. And Domino's actually allows me to sit in there for lunch.
Dude, that was the nice thing when I was down at the strip post office is I was really convenient to like Spearmint Rhino, Cheetah's, you know, Deja Vu.
Those are all strip clubs, by the way.
Yeah, go in there and take my heat breaks. Still come out sweating, though.
I only had one time in my time being a steward when somebody got heckled for taking breaks when it was hot outside. Mm-hmm. And the resulting grievance I had from it, the settlement was very clear that management will give no carrier any grief about having to take additional breaks due to heat.
Nice. That's good union leadership right there. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. I think we pretty much covered what we want to cover. Michael, anything else you want to get in while we have Fred here? Otherwise, I'm going to wrap it up.
No.
All right. Cool. Well, Fred, thank you very much for coming on. Stay put on the Zoom. I'm going to wrap up the recording. And guys, thanks for listening. We got the two masterminds together, Michael and Fred. And you hear a little bit about the future of the NALC. So thank you guys for listening. For Fred Woodley of Delivering Solidarity, for Michael Brazemley, my name is Alan Gigax, and I will catch you all next time.